Welcome to Wormhole Waffles, a Stargate podcast.
Welcome to Wormhole Waffles. I'm your host, Chelsea, and with me is my co-host, Arzu.
Hello.
Last week, we talked about Stargate SG-1, Season 6, Episodes 9 and 10, where we got annoyed by the Tok'ra yet again, but we also learned some interesting history for them. And so today, we're going to be talking about Season 6, Episodes 11 and 12, Prometheus and Unnatural Selection. Prometheus premiered on August 23rd, 2002, was written by Joseph Mlotsy and Paul Mully, and directed by Peter F. West. Unnatural Selection premiered on January 10th, 2003, was written by Brad Wright, Robert C. Cooper, and Jeff King, and directed by Andy Makeda. So we have some very exciting ship news this week, and a sort of cameo. Arzu, would you please summarize these episodes?
So can I say that when I first saw Chelsea's notes, when I went to watch and I saw very exciting ship news, my brain took that in a different direction.
I meant literal.
Yeah, yeah, you meant actual ships. And I was like, Sam Jack, is it time? Is it finally time? It wasn't. Actually, we're mad at Jack this week.
Yep.
We're very mad at Jack this week.
For the second episode.
But these episodes, basically Prometheus, a journalist, has found some stuff out about what the government's up to. And they, for some reason, invite her on a tour, which goes very, very wrong when they're hijacked.
Yeah.
And Unnatural Selection, the Asgard and the replicators are here. Things are going wrong. Earth's in danger. And we're mad at Jack.
Yep.
And these two episodes follow one after the other.
Yeah, I feel like it's interesting that these episodes are an arc because the first one leads into the second one. But out of all of the arcs that we've seen so far, these two episodes have the least to do with each other.
I forgot they were an arc until I was looking back at the notes. Because they're so distinct in plot. Like one of them is fully about the ship and the hijackers, and it resolves a, I keep thinking I'm going to say it's wrong, an NID plot. Is that ID, right?
Yeah.
I've had a long day. I'm mixing everything up. But like it resolves the NID thing, and then the second episode is like a replicator plot. It is a whole other plot.
Yeah.
And it's only Michael Shanks not wanting to leave the show and therefore coming back as Thor that links these two, because Thor's like, oh, hey, you fixed this. Come deal with this problem. And then it picks back up with Thor.
Yeah, yeah.
At the beginning?
Well, I feel like the link between the two is the ship.
the new ship.
But that's it.
That they're in the ship. But like, the link between all of these episodes is that they have a Stargate. Like, that doesn't make the whole series one arc.
Yeah. It was still a good arc, though.
It was good. They were a good set of episodes. I don't know that I would call them an arc, even though they do have a little to be continued.
Yeah. That's true. Okay, so let's do our quote reveal. Last week I gave you the quote, "Hey, you know there's only two ways off this ship, don't you? Handcuffs or a body bag." And your guess was that they're on board a military vessel, something is going wrong, and they can't leave, and they want to do something to fight back, so either Sam or Jack delivers this line. Well, you got the person wrong, it was Jonas who said it, but your context was on point.
Because my thinking was, like, if you're getting arrested or killed, every other alien race doesn't arrest or kill. They will just kill you. The military would arrest you. So that's why I was thinking they were on a military vessel. But Jonas is a little sassy, isn't he?
This wasn't even that sassy a line.
Like, he was trying to, like, appeal to the guy.
Yeah. But so, still, I feel like he's getting more confident.
He is getting more confident. But I think when I heard this line in my head, like, prior to hearing it on the show, it was kind of like, you know there's only two ways out, don't you? Like, it was like a really sassy line delivery. Yeah. Whereas this was him kind of being very straightforward. He's like, I don't know why you're siding with these people. Like, if you're not killed, you will be arrested. Like, like, think about this. So it was actually a pretty straightforward delivery that I hadn't considered before.
Yeah. I feel like you usually do, you either, like, get the context perfect or you get the person. It's hard for you to get both, but it's beautiful when you get the context so perfectly. Like, when you said military vessel, I was like, damn. Like, what a guess. Because normally I feel like you would say, like, they're in the SGC or something like that. I was like, no.
Well, because it's a military vessel. Because that's the only context in which any of these characters would get arrested is by the United States military.
Yeah, but guessing that
they're otherwise in the vessel, they're going to just be killed.
Yeah, but still, yeah, it was really good. Okay, so starting with Prometheus, we start off with like a previously on with like recapping what happened with Adrian Conrad. I'm like, oh, man, this guy.
I like that both of us started. You're like, I'm never happy to see him in the recap, and my notes say not this bitch again.
I was wondering, like, neither of us are happy to see about this guy. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I meant, well, because he's the only bitch we would have seen thus far.
Well, I was thought maybe you were talking about the reporter. I'm like, but we haven't seen her before.
We haven't seen her before.
Yeah.
So no, not happy to see Conrad
ever. Yeah, Conrad is a little bitch, you're right.
Problem solved though.
Okay, so we start out this episode with me questioning what kind of complex Sam is parking in that she feels safe enough to leave her car locked but with all of the windows down, because she's like walking out to her car and a reporter approaches her and both of the windows on the driver's side are fully down. And I'm like, are you not worried about your car being jacked? Like,
I almost wondered if that was like, it was down so that they could stand at a certain angle and not catch the camera and the reflection.
Yeah.
Because no other reason.
Well, because I mean, the way that she played it was like, since both of the windows were down, she could directly put her bag into the back seat. And then, when she got in, the window was already down, so she could keep talking to the reporter through the window after she got in. So, I mean,
is it like, was she on a military? No, because then how would the reporter get in there?
Yeah, it couldn't have been a secure location.
Oh, like, if it's a secure location, then it doesn't matter, but.
But it couldn't have been.
I don't know.
And also, why is she in this random office park?
I thought for a second that it's like her building, but then I'm like, no, she's a house, isn't she?
Yeah, maybe she's going to like a doctor or something like that. But then, like, why are you leaving your car windows down? That's not, I'm like,
unless it was a secure location and they just like snuck in.
Maybe, but like, this is 2002. I don't.
That's okay. You know what? I keep being the one to make this point, but yeah, the
math ain't mathin' on this one.
No. Unless it's like a location where the media would have been granted access for like a press briefing. And she just kind of like left the briefing room.
But even if it is some kind of secure location, there were easily hundreds of cars there. So you're really trusting that everybody within this location, even if it is secure, is not going to like try to steal something out of your car, you know?
Maybe there's nothing in her car worth stealing. I guess the car is worth stealing.
Yeah.
But maybe there's just nothing in her car. Like, she doesn't leave valuables in there.
I guess. But then like somebody.
Maybe she was only gone for a couple minutes.
But somebody could come and plant something in her car, like plant a recording device.
The math ain't mapping, I think, is the conclusion here.
Yeah. I know this is extremely nitpicky, but it just bothered me. But anyway, so we have this reporter named Jillian Donovan who comes up and is like, your name came up in my investigation and I can't name my sources, but I found this, you know, piece of an element called trinium, and like, what is it? Is it used for some kind of reactor? And Sam's just like pretending to not know anything.
I like that she's like, it's made of an alloy that, like, according to my sources, hasn't been found on this planet before. And I'm like, I love that your conclusion is, did we get something from aliens and not the government is building a weapon?
Right. If you find a sample of a metal that is made of an alloy you've never seen before, my first assumption would be that it was created in a lab.
My first assumption would be the military. It would be like weaponry or a vehicle or but like created by Earth's military.
Right. And then I liked your comment about how does this random reporter know somebody who can test metal?
Like, okay. For those who don't know, I work in media. I'm a journalist. I don't have resources like this. I'm checking my own facts. I'm doing all that myself. I certainly don't have enough money to be driving a limo around town. I have to drive my parents' cars because I don't make enough money to get my own. Like, this is what we're dealing with in the media. So I don't know how this lady's got enough money for like a limo.
You don't have a metal guy who can test random samples for you?
I don't have a metal guy who can test samples for me. I wish I had a metal guy.
I feel like the limo thing is more practical, though. If you had a company-issued car and driver, that would be
more practical. I like driving. Somebody give me the car.
Either way. And what's funny is, like, for somebody to have that kind of access to specialists and, yeah, like a car with a driver, I feel like you'd have to be an editor at, like, the New York Times to be on that kind of level, right?
And whereas, if you're, like, chasing people down in the parking lot, like,
you are not an editor.
You're not that senior.
Yeah, I think the news source is called, like, Inside Access or something. I'm like, that sounds like a tabloid. Or, like, maybe, like, a second or third rate news source. You know what I mean? Like,
Inside Access sounds like an entertainment tablet. It sounds like Access Hollywood. It sounds like, I think there used to be a magazine called Inside.
Uh-huh. Maybe this is, like, her trying to make a big breakthrough and switch from, like, entertainment journalism to, like, more rigorous, you know, stuff. But
which is so funny to think of because, like, I don't know if anybody's noticed this in rom-coms, but there'll be, like, somebody who works on, like, the celebrity beat, and they're like, I just need to get one big story about, like, war crimes, and then I can go on back to writing about, like, serious things. I'm like, those are completely different desks and two completely different skill sets. Like, what are you doing? So, like, this girl works for Access Hollywood, and she wants to work for 2020. Like,
yeah.
Is that what it's called, 2020?
I think so.
Okay, I said 2020, but I was thinking 60 Minutes. She wants to work for 60 Minutes, but she works for Access Hollywood. Like, that's what's happening here.
It's very How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days.
I don't even remember that one, but I believe you.
She does fashion thing, or she has like a how-to kind of column in a girl magazine, like Cosmo. Does she want to write
about war crimes?
She has this, like, article that she's written about freeing the people of Tajikistan.
For Cosmo?
Yeah. And, of course, they're not going to print it.
Like, that's a completely different magazine. Like, if that's what you want to work on, great. But, like, that's not here.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. This is so, like, this girl, Miss Donovan, is in a rom-com of her own making. Uh-huh. She is the main character of a rom-com and accidentally fell into a sci-fi show.
Yeah. I hope after this, she gets back to her rom-com and, like, gets her dream job doing the war beat or whatever.
This is going to be the thing she mentions to the guy in the beginning. It'll be like, the last time I tried to chase down a big story, I got abducted by aliens. And he's going to be like, what? And it's like, she's so quirky. But, like, it's...
You know, also, I think we do see her, this character again, and I feel like the next time we see her, she's like a news anchor, and that's also a completely different job than entertainment journalist.
That's like, sometimes there's some crossover, but not always, not usually.
I guess it's a step in the right direction if you're trying to get on that, like, hard news beat, but...
She's at the end of her rom-com arc. Now she got her dream job as an anchor, as she got the guy...
I hope
don't
so.
Know who the guy is, but she got him. He probably looks like an off-brand Jack the same way she looks like an off-brand Sam,
right?
I thought that was gonna be like plot relevant. It's not at all.
No, it's not. They just have a remarkable number of white women with short blonde hair on this show.
It's like, I guess that was the style, but it's just, I thought it was like relevant that she looks so much like Sam, and no, she just happens to be a white woman with blonde hair.
Yeah. So Jillian wants to run this story, and so Sam talks to Hammond, is like, I don't know how seriously we need to take this. So Hammond calls Major Davis and basically assigns him the task of figuring out how serious Jillian is about this story and how they can kill it. And so, like, he manages to go talk to Jillian in her limo. And my comment's just like, I love him being like calm but stern. Like, it's a good look for him.
It is.
And so they end up, what I feel like is another wild use of the president card, is Hammond calls the president of the United States. And the president of the United States calls the chairman of this news agency, Inside Access, that Jillian works for. And I'm like, I'm sorry. Does the president not have better things to do?
I love the idea of the president just really wanting to be involved in SG1.
Yeah. He's like, call me for anything.
He's really into the SJC, and he's like, whatever you guys need. And I mean that. And then, like, one time they didn't call him and his feelings got hurt. So then they're like,
But it's so funny because her boss is just like, well, you know, if the president tells you to kill the story, you kill the story. And I'm like, well, yeah, I mean, you don't want to be accused of treason. And yeah, I mean, I would agree with that. If the president of the United States called my boss and said she can't run this story, I'd be like, yeah, okay, I'm never touching it. Like,
that you just run somewhere with no extradition. But my thing is, I get that, like, they have the umbrella of the president for why they do what they do next, which is, like, invite her to come see what's going on under, like, a massive NDA. But I'm like, there is no NDA big enough to stop, like, essentially a whistleblower from blowing the whistle if they're really inclined. I'm like, this is, like, yeah, she'll never work again. She'll be arrested or she'll have to flee the country. But, like, she could still run the story.
Yep. She really could.
Like, there's no guarantee she won't. So, I'm like, that's a massive amount of trust to put in her.
Yeah. If she has some kind of escape plan to go to a different country, she absolutely could, like, she could even just post it on, like, a personal blog, you know, and then,
like, it
and
could, flee the it country. Could leak.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's a huge risk. But, yeah, I mean, I just think it's so funny that she, like, continues to try to fight for this story after being told that the president doesn't want her. I'm like, I wouldn't continue to fight personally, but okay. But, yeah, so they go, yeah, it's like they go do this tour. And you're right. It's just, it makes no sense. It makes absolutely no sense. And so Hammond tells Sam and Jonas to do the tour. And they very clearly do not want to. And I was like, I guess they had to choose Sam and Jonas because Jack would be too curmudgeon about it.
Until something permanently fused to his forehead.
Yeah, that and, like, his way of speech would be, like, a red flag.
Yeah, 100%. Like, even if they didn't flag it as alien, they'd be, like, foreign operative.
Right.
Which I had a note later because I didn't notice until they showed up halfway through the episode that Jack and Teal'c weren't in the first half of the episode.
Yeah.
And I have come to the conclusion that because Sam and Jonas were giving them the tour, that these two went to stand in line for Star Wars Episode II tickets.
Why not?
Because the timing lines up.
Yeah.
I think.
When it does not line
up. When does it does line up even a little bit. The movie came out 6 months before this.
Oh, darn.
I thought the timing lined up. I'm going to pretend they went to watch it again.
Maybe they were signing up for tickets to, like, a meet and greet kind of thing.
They were buying tickets to Star Wars Celebration.
Yeah. Some kind of, like, con, you know, Star Wars con.
They were out doing Star Wars things, and that's why they're not in the first half of the episode.
Yeah, sure. Why not? We can make up whatever we want.
There's a Star Trek joke later, so, like, you can't tell me that that's not what was happening.
Yeah, exactly. And so Sam and Jonas meet Jillian and her boss out in the desert. I think this is out near Area 51 is where they're building this. Because they do mention Nevada. So I think they're not directly, it's not directly in Area 51, but it's like adjacent to it.
Area 51 in New Mexico?
Oh, is it?
Yeah. Isn't it where Roswell is?
Yeah.
It's in New Mexico.
Listen, it all bleeds together. Anyway, so they're in Nevada.
They're in the desert.
It's fine. You know what I mean.
I know what you mean.
And so it's like middle of the desert, and there's just this little building with, like, a cute little building that's it's tiny. And of course, the reporters are, like, underwhelmed. We find out that everything is underground. And so they get in this elevator and it goes down, and when they come out of the elevator, it immediately opens up into this huge cavern with this giant ship in it. And I was like, I'm internally questioning, does the elevator only have two stops or does it have multiple? Because I feel like the first stop would be it opens into like office space. You know what I mean?
I wonder if they have two elevators, one for the people who actually, like an express elevator.
Uh-huh.
Like one that goes to every floor and then one that just goes straight to the hangar.
Right.
Both for people who need quick access to the hangar and for things like this where you don't want them to see everything. That's all you're showing them.
Yeah, but I mean, normally you wouldn't be allowing anybody in who didn't have clearance anyway. So like, this is like a one-time thing. So
for easy access.
Yeah, I just found it convenient that it opened directly onto the hangar.
Unless it's like the type of thing where like, depending on the floor you're on, you need like clearance to use the elevator so you can code it to go straight there and not like make a bunch of stops because somebody getting in here may not have clearance to go where you're going. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Maybe. I don't know. I just thought it was odd, but obviously like a convenience thing for filming. But yeah, so we get our first look at the X-303, aka the Prometheus. So yay, it's our first spaceship.
Yay! And not the Enterprise, as Jack tried to call it.
No. He gets shot down pretty quickly. And yeah, I personally do not find the design of the ship particularly attractive, but that's just me. It looks very military. It looks very U.S. military.
It's not... I miss the heaviness of, like, sci-fi ancient Egypt.
Uh-huh.
And how, like, prominent that used to be.
Uh-huh.
Because this is just some ship. This is just some military ship.
I mean, it's definitely, like, utilitarian, which is not bad, necessarily, you know.
Yeah.
It is what it is. But yeah, I did find it fascinating that they decided that they were not going to tell these reporters about the Stargate. So they're like, we have this tech upgrade because of a alien ship that crashed in the ocean in 1978. I'm like, oh, did you now? Okay. Sure. And yeah, I mean, I feel like that is a good cover-up because by the end of the episode, like, Jillian knows that aliens are real, but she still doesn't know about the Stargate.
Yeah, it's like the best possible scenario.
Yeah. She doesn't know that we can regularly come and go from other planets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. It was a good cover story.
Mm-hmm. And so they enter the ship and they're going on a little tour. And so there's Jillian and her boss. And then there are, I think, four camera people. I think there's three guys and one lady. And I feel like that lady walked straight out of the 80s.
Oh my God, the hair?
The hair, it was like permed hair with bangs and like gold hoop earrings and a leather jacket. I'm like, what year is this again?
She's like, don't be suspicious. And then comes out looking as suspicious as humanly possible.
Yeah. I mean, she didn't look bad necessarily. It just looked like the wrong decade. Maybe she was going for retro.
Oh, you were going to say maybe she was going through something.
Well, I mean, maybe that too. But I mean, consider she's going working through for. It.
She's is going through it.
If I feel like if you're working for the NID, you're going through something. You know, they're doing this little tour and Sam is talking about how fast the ship can go and how, you know, the hyperdrive works and all that kind of stuff. And she notices something strange going on with the computer. And so she's going to go up to the bridge and check it out. And that's when all the cameramen start to make their move. And so they chase her and she ends up locking herself in a room full of spare equipment. I'm like, okay, that's very convenient. But I feel like this is like another MacGyver reference. You know, she's going to find a way to MacGyver herself out of this problem.
So sad they didn't make that joke.
I know. Right? It was right there. And so Jonas also figures out that something is wrong. And so he tries to kind of sabotage the computer system, and he takes out the control crystal in the engine room and he hides it. And so then the camera crew comes in and, like, you know, they show their hand and kind of reveal what they're doing. And Jillian's boss, Al, has paid it off. He's in on it too.
Poor Jillian. She's just trying to be her plucky rom-com self.
Right?
This is the thanks she gets.
I know. And she's just like, I thought we were friends. And he's like, they're paying me a lot of money. I'm like, wow.
And she's like, yeah, okay, fair.
Well, I mean, I don't think she thought that was fair, but. And so we find out that this camera crew actually work for the NID, and they want the release of Adrian Conrad, who is now Gould, and also Colonel Simmons, who's in jail also. And if they don't get what they want, then they are going to blow up the hyperdrive, which will essentially blow up the entire state of Nevada, because that's how big of an issue it is. So,
yay.
Yeah, and so it obviously becomes a huge problem. And they, you know, they take control of the ship. They lock up anybody who was currently on the ship, which doesn't seem to be that many people. I only saw, like, I don't know, maybe 2 to 6 other people who happened to be on the ship at the time. I wouldn't think there were very many.
I figured they just kind of emptied it out.
We do see other people. We do see a few other military people very briefly when Jonas and Jillian are locked up with them at one point, but it's a very brief shot.
But, like, not like anything beyond, like, basic security.
Yeah.
Because, like, even Sam said, like, when something was going wrong and she's like, there's no test scheduled for today, and then they realize something's going wrong.
Yeah.
Like, I figured they just kind of suspended all work on it for the day, lest they reveal something
right. That
Jillian shouldn't see.
Right. Yeah, so now it's a whole situation, and Major Davis has this whole setup where he's, like, talking to the camera crew, and Jack finally shows up, and he is mad. My notes say, oh no, Arzu's boyfriend is mad at my boyfriend.
Listen, it's hot when he's mad, but I'm mad at him right now, so.
Yeah, so Jack is obviously very upset that they've got this hijacker situation, and also that his girlfriend is in danger. And so, yeah, he's prepared to take it out on anybody. Meanwhile, Sam figures out a way to use the comm system in the ship and kind of, like, muster up a radio, and she manages to then contact Colonel O'Neill and Major Davis and tell them what's going on. And so they're just like, well, I guess try to find a way to get out of that room that you're locked in and do what you can to stop them. And we'll also work on it from our end.
We tried.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, she promptly gets to work. So very capable in this episode, I feel like. And
except for the bit with leaving her windows down.
Right. That's true. She got better as the episode went on.
It was a lapse in judgment.
Yeah. And I don't remember exactly what kind of exchange happened, but the camera crew were, I think they were trying to get Jonas to fix what he had messed up in the computers and to show how serious they were. They shot Al. And I was like, well, I guess he was the expendable character this episode. So sucks for him.
Sucks to be Al.
Yeah.
I mean, anytime anybody shows up who's not, like, one of our mains, I'm like, there's a 75% chance you're going to end up dead.
Right. How red is your shirt today?
Honestly, what a great way to put it.
And so, meanwhile, Sam is, like, crawling around in, like, the service hatches. And I love how she's just like, ooh, what can I mess up in here? Let's pull off this panel. Let's short out this fuse. But I mean, it's kind of a combination of like, let's see what works. But then also, she is brilliant and she actually knows exactly what she's doing. She disables exactly what she wants to disable in that one panel. I'm like, I don't know if that's entirely skill or also partially luck that she was able to find that particular hatch. But
well, with her being as skilled as she is, I almost wonder if she's like mentally gone through this before in like in case of emergency, in case of a hijacking, like depending on where she is in the ship, what can she do to sort of slow them down as much as possible? Like they've had enough troubles that I'm almost wondering how much of this was like intentional.
I'm not sure that anybody could ever prepare for like, oh, in case there's a hijacking, but certainly I feel like even if she's not been directly working on the building of the Prometheus, it's probably like her pet project and that like she's keeping up with everything that's going on with it. And like, she knows the plans by heart.
So if you know how it works, then you can like retrofit that in your head to break it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's true. That's a good point.
Yeah. So she's amazing, basically. Meanwhile, Jack gets the idea of using a death glider that they still have from a previous episode and flying on board the ship. And Major Davis is like, "Ooh, yes, the radar is not completed. So if you go through the lower hangar, they won't be able to see you coming." I'm like, gotta love it. And it's kind of like one of those things of how this is usually true for villains in sci-fi shows, is villains never look out the window.
Yeah. If there's one thing they're going to do, it's not look out the window. And if there's a second thing they're not going to do, it's not monologue.
Right. But I feel like that's such a common trope for the Empire in Star Wars, is that they never look out the window.
Because why would they?
If you looked out the window, you might see that this TIE fighter, you know, their codes might check out, but they're painted weird colors.
They all sound really nervous for some reason.
Then we have, so like Simmons and Adrian Conrad are on board the ship now, and the hyperdrive hasn't finished being built yet, so Conrad is there to finish completing the hyperdrive so that they can escape to another planet. I feel like he really knows what he's doing, because he's like, okay, I have to work with these people to get off this planet, but he is ready to watch his own back and do his own thing. I feel like Conrad and Simmons are both preparing to double cross each other, and we'll find out who wins that fight.
Went great for everybody.
Yeah. And so, yeah, so Conrad finishes the hyperdrive and he's like, okay, well, I'm done here. I'm going to go take over the ship now, basically. And so he goes up to the bridge and attacks, I think it's only the woman whose name I don't remember, and Simmons, who are on the bridge. So he just like smacks the woman and she gets knocked out, and he kind of tussles with Simmons, and Simmons shoots Conrad, but like, he's a ghoul, so he just transferred bodies.
That's a good plan.
Yeah. I'm like, Simmons, you really didn't think that one through, did you?
I feel like Simmons thinks nothing through.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm glad he's gone.
Yeah. So meanwhile, Jack and Teal get on board and they manage to find Sam just in the nick of time, because she's being attacked by the three men, cameramen. And so they take all those guys out and tie them up and, you know, make very quick work of it. And I'm like, okay, it's like Three Musketeers. We're defeating the evil people of the week. And so I think they split up, because does Sam go off to, oh, Sam is watching the bridge, and Jack and Teal go after Simmons, who is now the Gold, and they get into a fight and they end up spacing Simmons out an airlock.
So, I laughed.
Yeah, I was like, nice work.
It was just, he was like, ooh, and he made this like face, and then he got pulled out, and I'm like,
very nice use of the airlock.
Oh, yeah. I thought it was funny.
Yeah. Yeah, and so I think, unfortunately, they had started a trip through hyperspace before all of that happened, and they came had come out of hyperspace, and SG-1 was back in charge, but Sam was like, we can't go home because I don't know where we are. And the woman was like, there's supposed to be a planet with treasure here. But I guess the Conrad didn't know that the hyperdrive was using Nequadria, so he didn't know he had to calculate for that. So they're not where they're supposed to be.
Nor are they able to get home.
No. But lucky for us, apparently the Asgard track all hyperspace activity around Earth. I'm like, well, that's nice.
Yeah. I'm like, are you trying to keep Earth safe or make sure Earth's not getting into some shit?
Right?
Probably both.
Yeah. So Thor shows up and he's like, oh yeah, I tracked all here, no biggie. And they're like, wow, thanks for the rescue. And he's like, actually, I need you to rescue us from something. Because the replicators are back.
I need a favor.
What?
No, Thor does.
Oh, he's Thor like, needs a favor.
Not altruistic. I need a favor.
Right? This is a I scratch your back, you scratch mine situation. Like,
the replicators are back.
And I really feel like Thor got the better end of the deal.
I mean, yeah, because everybody else got a ride home.
Yeah.
The people who got the best deal were, like, everybody else who got dropped off. Uh-huh. They got the best deal.
Yeah. They get to go home.
Yeah. So, I know this... Thor doesn't, like, do anything, but...
Yeah. Well, so this leads directly into the next episode. And Thor just, like, basically teleports them back home because it goes so fast. They had spent several minutes at least in hyperspace. I want to say they spent like 20 minutes on hyperspace, but then it was like, whoop. So like, do the Asgard ships have like hyperspace?
Yes.
How do they go so much faster?
They're like every other species, alien race in this show. They're like, I'm not telling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they just like boop on over back to Earth. Thor is like, so can you help me with this problem with the replicators? And Jack's like, I'm thinking about it. And Thor is like, that's all I need.
Like, that sounds like a yes to me.
Yep. And it's just like, I feel like Thor is just like, I need your help. And I am much more capable than you. So I'm going to force you into this, essentially.
I need your help. And I'm getting it.
Yeah. I am taking you on this mission, whether you want to or not. Because he like transports everybody but SG-1 back down to the SGC, and he unloads half of the canteen, and the entire armory gets transported up onto the Prometheus. And I'm like, buddy, thanks, but I feel like that's a little bit overkill.
He doesn't want to give them any reason to complain. I do like that, like, we get there a bit later, but we find out that he brought half the canteen, but didn't, like, bring anything to store it in, so everything's just, like, melting.
Yeah. Which leads to, like, one of the best scenes.
It's so cute!
Because Teal'c and Jonas decide that they better get started eating the frozen stuff first, so they're just chowing down on ice cream. It looks like Ben and Jerry's.
And Jack tries to take some of Teal'c's, and Teal'c like gives him the stink eye and gives him like his own. And then halfway through the little pint of ice cream, Teal'c just like switches their ice cream. Which makes me wonder if that was the plan all along. Like, he wanted both flavors, but he just picked the one and gave one to Jack, knowing he was going to take it halfway through so he could have like half of both.
I don't know. I almost wonder if that was like ad-libbed by Chris Judge.
And he just looks so stern the whole time that like Richard Dean Anderson's like, I guess somebody told him to do that. I'm not going to be like, I'm not going to fight him on this choice.
And they were eating it with forks? Which I mean,
Jonas
I
guess... had a spoon.
Oh, you did? Okay.
So I wanted to make a note that it was like weird that they were using forks, but like I don't remember what Teal'c had. Jonas had a spoon, but Jack had a fork.
Okay. I thought Teal'c also had a fork, but maybe not. Maybe it was just Jack.
I mean, maybe Teal'c did have a fork. Jonas is like, I'm doing this properly. Teal'c's like, whatever.
Yeah. And Jonas was like, this is so good. I'm like, have you not had it before, Jonas?
He's a baby.
Yeah, but he's been there for several months now. You'd think he'd have the ice
cream. They haven't given him ice cream.
Oh, somebody give Jonas ice cream.
He's just a baby.
They do all this, and Thor does allow them to, like, contact Hammond, and, you know, Hammond gives them permission to go. I'm like, I'm not sure you really had a choice. I feel like Thor is strong-arming you into this. And it's so funny to me that, like, Thor can basically force them into this mission, and he says that he needs them for their physical prowess. I'm like, yeah, you have all this technology, but Jack could put you in a chokehold and, like, half a second and you'd be SOL because you have that puny tiny little body that has like no muscle on it.
Spindly limb. Yeah. I did not write the context for this scene, so I don't remember what it is, but I think it's fairly early on given how early it is in my notes. But there's a bit where Jack tells Hammond to dial number one on his speed dial.
Oh yeah.
And he's like, my grandchildren? And he's like, number two then. And I just wrote, he's such a good grandpa.
Uh-huh.
He's just, I have such affection for this man.
He has his grandchildren on a higher speed dial number than the president.
Because they're more important. It's just so wholesome. And I just wanted to shout that out before we like get too far into this.
Yeah. He is so cute.
He's not my favorite, but he's like up there.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
He's just so endearing. I don't know.
He is really sweet. And he also looked like genuinely thrilled when Jack did the like hologram messaging thing.
Yeah.
Where he like hologrammed his body into the room to talk to Hammond. Hammond looked so happy. I'm like, oh.
Y'all missed it and you'll never hear it because we didn't hit record in a timely fashion. But we had a whole After Dark thing on Hammond that we just went on with a bit too long and it just never got recorded. We didn't turn it on. So nobody's ever going to hear it, but just know that we love that man.
Maybe one day we'll record like an actual After Dark episode.
Because usually we'll catch snippets of conversations before like the episode proper. But for some reason, we just really went on this tangent about Hammond for like a good, like for several minutes.
Yeah.
And we just, nobody thought to hit record. So I just wanted to mention that as well. This lost content you'll never hear.
Right, we'll have to recreate it sometime. And so, yeah, actually one thing I was thinking too at the beginning of this episode was seeing the Prometheus right next to Thor's ship. I'm like, it's so tiny. Like, it looked huge when it was out in the desert in this underground bunker thing, but then compared to Thor's ship, I'm like, dang, Thor, how many Asgard you got on that ship?
Imagine it's just him.
Right? I mean, it probably is, honestly.
It's like him, like, the one friend who wanted to come for a drive.
But it's like, what do you need all that ship for, though? Like, I feel like the size of Thor's ship is just like short kings who drive the big trucks. You know?
Yeah.
Because he has, like, no muscle in his body. But he has a big ship.
If he's a short king, he doesn't need a big truck. Conclusion, Thor's just short. Not a short king. They don't need to compensate. But yes, that type of man drives an aggressive car.
Yep.
Thor subscribes to Andrew Tate.
Oh, no.
Sorry, I don't make the rules.
No, not Thor. But anyway.
My whole fandom's going to come for me now. I'm kidding. For legal reasons, that was a joke.
So we find out that the Asgard studied Rhys, who was the original replicator, and they weren't able to bring her back online because she was like damaged beyond repair. I'm like, she only had one bullet wound. I feel like that's not damage beyond repair, but whatever.
They're dramatic.
Yeah. And so the only thing that they were able to get from Reese was the ability to send out the command to come forth. And so they bring all of Replicators in existence, I guess, back to their home planet, Hala, and they set up a time dilation trap so that as soon as it was set, the Replicators would experience 1 year for every 10,000 of our years. Which is a really cool idea.
Yeah.
But as Jack says, even he knows that you shouldn't mess with time.
And he's right.
Yeah, it's very messy. And so it ends up being that. So this time dilation device was encased in a solid neutronium shell, but apparently the Replicators were able to get through that shell just in time to be able to turn it off before it activated. And then they were able to reverse it. So now they have sped up time and are progressing really quickly.
And are hot now.
Right? Yeah, I'll get to that.
That's in my notes. I'm like, so the Replicators are hot now.
Yeah. So yeah, they get to the planet and they touch down this planet. And I was like, well, for one thing, I guess the atmosphere is still breathable because they don't go out wearing suits or anything. Oh, and also, Jonas was like doing his countdown of like how many meters until they hit this, landed on the surface. And the way that he yelled touchdown was so funny to me. I just burst out laughing the way he yelled that. But anyway, the surface is made out of dormant Replicator blocks. And I'm like, I feel like that's the equivalent of walking on skeletons.
It's like the catacombs.
Yeah. It's real creepy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then again, so are the Replicators.
Uh-huh.
Except and for so, Fifth. He is baby boy.
He is baby boy, and we love him.
And I don't remember his number, but the tall, hot one.
First?
No.
Third? There's only three guys. There's first, third.
Not the like older one.
Oh, okay. Then you probably don't have to talk about third then.
Yeah. I like him. I like him. I like that actor.
I saw him and I was like, what have I seen him in? And he's just been like in a bunch of like one episode things of like all kinds of like sci-fi stuff.
And he had a huge arc in Battlestar Galactica, which is
where I was supposed to say. Yeah. And I haven't seen that.
He's such a baby boy and he's just so.
You're talking about Fifth?
He's just so in love. No.
Oh, you're talking about third. Okay.
He's just so in love with his love interest.
Okay.
And he is baby and he's also tall and hot. So I was happy to see him here.
Yeah. So when they get to this planet, there's only one structure on the entire planet, which to me looks like a miniature version of what is it called? Superman's lair.
Fortress of Solitude.
Yes, it looked exactly like that, except it made out of metal instead of ice.
Yes.
Yeah. And so, yeah, they go inside the Fortress of Solitude, and Sam finds the device right away, and it's still intact, so she thinks that she could fix it. And then Fifth walks in, our little baby boy walks in with his cute little curls, and
he is baby.
Yeah, well, we're calling him a baby boy. He's like 30. But
he's a full adult, but he is also a baby.
Yeah. And he's just like, hi. And the others are coming. And so all of these other people come in. There's five people total. And they're like, who are you? Jack's like, who are you? And that's the whole thing. And so they find out that these people are actually Replicators. And as soon as Jack finds that out, he starts shooting at them, of course. I think everybody else joins in, and the bullets have absolutely no effect. And I feel like they should have some effect, even if they're able to re-replicate the missing cells. I feel like it should still at least do something, but that's not important.
I did put in my notes, I'm like, why are you unloading an entire clip into a being that replicates?
Because sometimes they work on the normal replicators, the little spider ones.
An entire clip? And they're just kind of standing there and they're like, yeah.
Their hair is getting gently blown back in the wind.
Like, I've had sneezes that are more inconvenient than what's happening to them.
Yeah. And so then we find out what happened and how what we think of as the normal replicators were able to build first and complete him right before the time of dilation went into effect. And so then he was able, because like the normal replicators, their blocks are too big to be able to fit inside the device. But he's not really made out of blocks. I feel like it's kind of like nanotechnology, I think. And so he could actually get inside the device and stop it. And so then they set about making more. And so they're all like these humanoid replicators that are just like Reese. Well, and like Sam makes this whole point of like, oh, you modeled yourself in our image. And they're like, no, we modeled ourselves after a Reese, obviously. And it's like, well, but Reese was modeled after humans, but okay.
But they're taking that part out of the equation because... irrelevant to whatever they're thinking.
Yeah, and then I had this comment of like, yeah, see, they didn't need the entire armory of the SGC because they use like one clip each and realize that their guns are ineffectual.
Which, like, I would understand if they came prepared with like a huge arsenal. Mm-hmm. Thor should know better. Well, you know, like, I get them not knowing.
Well, Thor didn't know that they had made people. He had no idea there were people.
That's true.
Okay. Yeah.
I take that back. There's plenty to drag Thor for, but this ain't it.
Yeah. And so first is really nice. And he's like, oh, yeah, like, let me come shake your hand like a total gentleman. And then as he's shaking Jack's hand, he puts his other hand through Jack's head. So that's fun.
Yeah. It reminded me of Once Upon a Time. Did you ever watch that one?
No.
So it's like all the fairy tale characters that like... It started off as like a really big thing in season one where the Evil Queen could like literally reach into somebody's chest and pull their heart out.
Mm.
And like crush it or corrupt it or whatever. By the end of the show, people were just reaching into each other's chests willy-nilly. And it kind of lost its punch, but the way he stuck his hand into Jack's head, I kind of expected him to come out with the brain, and it's like,
oh, annoying. No. No, thankfully it does not get that gruesome.
It's not even gruesome. And once upon a time, she like reaches her hand and it like pulls out this like glowing heart-shaped thing, and everybody's like fine when they take it out. Like, it doesn't kill anybody, but
that's weird.
Yeah, anyway, that's what it made me think of, so I wanted to share that.
So first is in Jack's head, and he just wants Jack to show him all the places he's ever traveled through the Stargate. And I'm like, okay, I feel like you could have done this in a less aggressive way, but...
You could have just asked.
Sure, right? Well, I mean, I guess to be fair, like, there's no way Jack would have told him willingly, so...
I know, but you can start with that.
Yeah. So they end up waking up on... Well, I guess before I get to that part. First says that Jack's
big habit.
Yeah, Jack's mind is full of chaos, humor, and pain. And then he makes Jack relive the death of his son.
Which was so out of pocket.
Yeah.
It was awful. I'm like, what are you doing?
Yeah. I mean, it's an effective threat. He's like, if you don't cooperate, I'm going to make you relive this over and over again.
Oh, 100%. That was so messed up.
Yeah. He is not aware of the Geneva Convention, I guess.
No. And then the way he was like, oh, yeah, that was your fault. I'm like, I get that he wasn't there. He has no way of knowing this. He's clearly pulling it from Jack's head.
Right.
But I'm like, first of all, rude. Second of all, it's so sad to think, like, I'm sure that pain never goes away, but it's so sad to think that, like, years later and Jack's still like, that was my fault.
Yeah, he's still blaming himself.
It's still, like, constantly
Yeah.
At the back of his head, in his heart, like,
yep.
So sad.
Yep. Yeah. And so after that violation, they end up waking up on the ship with no memory of what they actually showed the replicators in their heads. And it's been 37 hours.
Is this going to come back at all?
The 37 hour thing?
No, what they showed the replicators.
Maybe a little bit.
Because I'm like, that's a pretty big deal. Like, they were out for 37 hours and the replicators saw all this stuff. And it would just be like a huge wasted potential if like there was no repercussion for this down the line.
Right. I mean, we are going to see the replicators again. This is not the end of the replicators. So we'll see. But yeah, I mean, Fifth is really sweet. Fifth carried them all to the ship himself, and because he wanted them to be more comfortable. I'm like, see, he's such a sweetie.
He's a baby.
Yeah. First wants to, I guess, force SG-1 to converse with them normally. And so they bring all their food into the Fortress of Solitude, and they're like, come sit on our replicator table. And eat your food, and we're gonna watch you because we don't need to eat. Of course, there's just like all this back and forth. Apparently, during this 37 hours that they were out, the replicators were busy making another humanoid, and so now we have Sixth. Apparently, the replicators really like the gender binary because they're going boy, girl, boy, girl, boy, girl. So,
Normally I would be like, let's not reinforce the binary. Two things. One, it's 2002. And two, you know, computers operate on a binary, a numerical binary.
True. So that's a good point.
Maybe that's why.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Not that we were having these conversations about the gender binary in 2002, but I think this is the only place where that would hold up because a computer operates on binary.
That's true. That's a good point. And so Sam kind of recognizes that Fifth is the most empathetic, and so she's going to let him enter her mind as a way to like try to get him on their side. And it actually works because he brings her into his subconscious so that they can talk there. And he's like, oh, y'all seem really nice and I want to help you, and the others are kind of mean, I get it. And she's like, well, you can help us escape and we'll take you with us. We just need to rig the time dilation to slow down like it was originally supposed to. And I was like, oh, I know where this is going and I don't like it.
I don't like this. I don't like it.
Sam really does intend to work with him and bring him with them, but when they all wake up and Fifth fixes the time device and they realize that they have to set it on a timer and run to the ship, and Fifth has to wait and go last because the others can read his mind and see where he's going, and so they don't want to tip off the others. And Jack basically tells Sam to set it for less time so that they can get away without Fifth. And she does look like she feels bad about it.
I know, but like...
But Jack.
Jack, you're Jack. Sleeping on the mental couch for a week.
Yeah. So they end up running to the ship and they leave without Fifth. And First comes in and the others are in the background too. And he's just like, oh, I think he calls him his son too. He's like, oh, my son, they have made a fool of you kind of thing.
I thought it was like son in like, you are younger than me and not...
Yeah.
You're my progeny.
That's true. Well, I mean, he kind of is, though.
I guess so.
Yeah.
But either way, he's like, no, they promised. And, like, they left him. And, like, to their credit, at least they look like they feel bad about it, but...
Not Jack. He didn't feel bad about it.
But, like, to Sam and Jonas's credit, they look like they feel bad about it. But I don't like it.
Yeah, he's Jonas... so
sad.
Jonas is like, you used his humanity against him. And Jack was like, he's not human. He's like, what are you like? Why are y'all feeling bad about it? And it's like, Jack,
please. We cannot keep having these conversations about humanity, Jack.
Right? And like, what constitutes a person, you know, with independence who deserves the right to live? Yeah. So Jack needs to go sit in timeout for a while. And our poor baby boy, he looks so heartbroken. And
I'm pouting, you can't see it.
But. Yeah. Spoiler alert, this will come back to bite them in the ass.
Good. They deserve to be bitten in the ass.
Yeah, I'm like, oh man. I feel like the first time I watched this, I don't know that I felt that moved necessarily, but I'm like, man, I really feel bad for Fifth. Like, he's such a sweetie and he really wanted to help. And honestly, he could have been a good ally because he was a nice guy. I don't think he would have like restarted the replicators. You know what I mean?
But he's not human, so.
Jack. Yeah, so that's where the episode ends with them betraying Fifth. We'll see where that leaves us later.
Sad.
Yeah. Oh, I saw in your notes they said your disc skipped again, but I don't think you missed much because if you just missed what Sam and Fifth were talking about when they were in his head, it was very brief. It was just like, can you please help us? Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, so you didn't really miss anything.
You didn't like whip out any surprise revelation that he's like her husband from the future or something. So I'm like, I assume it wasn't much.
Yeah, no, I don't think he missed anything.
Like, remember the kangaroo? And I'd be like, yeah. Totally. Yeah, okay, so it's just a
yeah. Okay, anything else about these episodes?
No.
Anything problematic? Well, Jack's behavior is problematic.
Behavior is problematic. We had something else that was problematic. No, that was it. It was Jack's behavior.
Well, I mean, like, the villains were being problematic, but I mean, that's kind of their job.
They're the villains. They're supposed to be.
Yeah. But otherwise, I think both these episodes were pretty fun.
Yeah, they hold up pretty well.
Yeah, they like have a good date with them.
The most problematic thing about this is journalists making limousine money.
Right?
Like, I'm sorry. But no.
Yeah, that's not a thing. Okay, so next week we will be discussing SG-1 Season 6, Episodes 13 and 14, Sight Unseen and Smoke and Mirrors. Arzu, are you ready for your next quote to guess?
Yes.
I swear, I wouldn't lie to you. Unfortunately, there were some unexpected side effects to this antidote.
I think it's Jonas. I think something has happened where something's gone wrong. They need... And this is like something like what he's seen before and he knows how to fix it. And they're like, that seems a little too easy. And he's like, wouldn't lie to you. That is the solution. But this had some unexpected side effects.
Okay. Well, we'll find out next week if you're right. That's it for today. If you enjoyed listening to our podcast, we would love for you to rate us 5 stars wherever you can. If you want to talk to us about Stargate, you can find us on our podcast Twitter and Tumblr page at Wormhole Waffles. You can find me on Twitter and Tumblr at Chelsea Fairless. Arzu, how about you?
You can find me on Twitter at Arzuamin. I'm at arzuamin.bluesky.social. I'm at arzug2 on Threads and Instagram. As a network, we are on Twitter at geeky_waffle. We are The Geeky Waffle on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and Tumblr. We're at thegeekywaffle.com. We're The Geeky Waffle on YouTube. And we're on Patreon, patreon.com/thegeekywaffle.
Thanks for joining us today, and we'll see you on the other side of the event horizon.